evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, October 7th, 2015. The U.S. National Security Advisor cancels a meeting with Riek Machar and James Wanyika after both sides show a clear disregard for the peace deal.
Machar's unwillingness to make compromises and security sector reform negotiations and the government's decision to create what I believe are 28 new states in violation of the spirit of the peace agreement, we decided not to receive the parties here at the White House.
And South Sudan's vice president defends President Kiir's decision to create 28 states in South Sudan.
We are prepared to sit down, of course, and see the nitty-gritty. As a matter of fact, there is room for still further debate, even with our brothers in the opposition.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The White House has abruptly cancelled a meeting with three senior South Sudanese officials: South Sudan Vice President James Wanyika, opposition chief Riek Machar, and former detainee Pagana Moon were supposed to meet with National Security Advisor Susan Rice yesterday. National Security Council spokesman Ned Price says the White House intended to use the high-level meeting
to press for unity in implementing the peace agreement that had been signed in August. We had planned, including Ambassador Rice had planned, to meet with all three parties together as representatives of the soon-to-be transitional government.
Price says the White House canceled the meeting after a recent violation of the ceasefire and after President Kiir's government and Machar's opposition group showed clear disregard for the peace deal.
After a renewal of fighting over the weekend, as well as Machar's unwillingness to make compromises and security sector reform negotiations and the government's decision to create what I believe are 28 new states in violation of the spirit of the peace agreement, we decided not to receive the parties here at the White House until they demonstrate a stronger commitment to promoting peace in South Sudan.
President Kiir announced on Friday that he is increasing the number of states in South Sudan from 10 to 28. He said his decision was guided by South Sudan's transitional constitution and the principle of decentralization and devolution of power. The United States and its partners in the Troika for South Sudan, Norway and United Kingdom released a statement yesterday condemning Mr. Kiir for unilaterally creating the new states. The Troika says in the statement that President Kiir's move directly contradicts his government's pledge to implement the peace deal. In a separate statement, the European Union also said President Kiir's order goes against the spirit and the letter of the IGAD Plus deal, which was supposed to end 20 months of fighting in South Sudan. Both the Troika and the EU say the peace deal for South Sudan states that decisions on, quote, structure of the country, unquote, will be addressed during a transitional constitution-making process. One of the main tasks of the transitional government, which is supposed to be set up next month, is to draw up new permanent constitution for South Sudan. South Sudanese Vice President Wanyika says that by redrawing South Sudan's internal boundaries, President Kiir was merely putting into action the will of the people.
It is the clamor, it is the demand of our people.
Wani says the government is willing to meet with the international community and with any other groups opposed to President Kiir's order.
If they feel disgruntled in any of the points, we are prepared to sit down, of course, and see the nitty-gritty. As a matter of fact, there is room for still further debate, even with our brothers in the opposition.
Wanyika says the creation of the new states and the terms of the peace deal will have to be incorporated into the new permanent constitution for South Sudan. Neither Wanyika nor Machar have commented yet to South Sudan in Focus on their council meeting with the White House. While the international community and several legal experts are criticizing President Kiir's move to create 28 new states, Eastern Equatoria State residents confirm what Vice President Wanyika is saying, and they insist they welcome President Kiir's move. VOA fellow Kaltuma Vanessa has this report.
Eastern Equatoria State Governor Louis Lobong Lojore says Eastern Equatoria residents not only approve of President Kiir's move, they are demanding that more states be created because they believe it will create jobs. Lobong says the only thing they disagree on is the name of one of the states.
Now, Morinyang is state in the Greater Kapweta. People say they do not want the name, but the name is not a problem. That can be looked into. They were demanding more states. That can still be pursued later. But generally, I think it was received very well.
Lobong says in his new role, he has formed the three committees for the two new states called Imotong and Namurunyang, which will distribute assets, human resource, and finance. Each committee will be made up of 5 to 7 people. Lobong disagrees with those who are calling the president's decision unconstitutional, saying it is in line with the law of South Sudan's transitional constitution.
When the president was reading a decree, he quoted articles in our constitution, transition constitution, that empowered him to do so. And I didn't know what are these people who say it is unlawful. Did they read the constitution?
Eastern Equatorial State Assembly Speaker Tobiolo Alberio says the people have been waiting for this. He says the parliament is ready to implement the president's decree.
Parliament of Eastern Equatorial State Legislative Assembly is positive on the move that has been taken by our president, His Excellency Salva Kiir Mayardit, who is the head of SPLM party in the Republic of South Sudan. We are very happy because that is one of our SPLM program and it has come to the right time to be implemented.
Alberio insists that President Kiir has the right to make such a decree, saying the democratically elected president has the power of the people and parliament will decide whether to rectify the decision.
The leadership can decide. And then after that, the provisional order will be now taken to the parliament, and the parliament now will deliberate on it, and it will be approved.
President Kiir's order creates 28 new states but leaves them without a constitution and says the formation of each new state legislature would be appointed by the members of parliament. A legal expert with the South Sudan Law Society says the order creating 18 additional states and reconfiguring the existing one is unconstitutional. David Deng also says the transitional constitution does not authorize the president to create new states or change borders. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
The caretaker governor of Western Equatoria State says security in the state is improving after a spate of deadly attacks on civilians and military bases by gunmen. But Governor Patrick Zamoi says there is still a long way to go to fully restoring peace, and he is appealing to the public for help in identifying and capturing those responsible for the killings, some of which date back to August. Zamoi says up to now, the government has been fighting the violent groups largely on its own. Philip Tonaleu reports for VOA from Juba.
Zamoya says most of Western Equatoria is calm, but three counties, Munduri East and West and Yambio, have seen attacks on military bases in recent weeks. He blames organized criminal groups for the attacks. Zamoya warns that young men are being lured into joining the armed groups and communities are not doing enough to stop the youth from joining the criminal gangs.
You find young men being abducted among the community. When you ask the community is quiet. When you ask them, who are these people? We don't know. Who have done this? We don't know. So we are trying to ask our community, for how long are we not going to know who is doing all the atrocity among them?
The Moy says the abductions of young men is so commonplace that the state government has not been able register and investigate all the cases that are reported. But he insists the state government is rising to the challenge forced by the armed groups and trying to mount a response to the abductions and forced conscription of young men into the gangs. He repeated his call for help from the public.
The problem is happening is In every situation where you want to get a correct information, you get from the common people. If the common people are not cooperating, how do you get the information? Because they are the people who are being affected. They should come up boldly and say, this is what we are suffering for. So far for us, a government, we are handling this issue clear and sure.
Zamoya says the state government is bottling not just the violent armed groups, but also resistance from local communities who have largely refused to cooperate with officials' investigations. Zamoya cites as an example how local communities condemned the government for arresting more than 30 members of a local armed group known as the Arrow Boys in July. Pressure from locals led the government releasing the Arrow Boys last month, it says. But Zamoya says the group behind the recent spate of violence is very dangerous.
Any car which is moving, they will loot all the goods in the car. If you are moving by foot or by motorbike, they will stop you. Your mobile phone, they will take it. Your money, they will take it and leave you go empty-handed. So to this nature, how do you classify them to be? It is organized crime. And to the other stage, we have find that now, some of their arm, especially in the Yambio area, some of them are putting all masks. When somebody covers all his faces with mask, he is already identified to be an organized crime. But where he goes his gun, he knows it himself. You and me, we don't know.
Zamoya says police and army patrols have been increased in the area most affected by the violence, and a nighttime curfew has been enforced. He says these efforts have had an impact and the number of attacks has come down. Zamoya says the fact that the government and Riek Machar's armed opposition signed a peace agreement in August to end 20 months of conflict in South Sudan should also help to consolidate peace in Western Equatorial State. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Western Bahr al-Ghazal government teaches school support staff how to read and write so they can help children do the same. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the worst thing you've ever eaten?
For me, I have no worst food. Because all kinds of food are the same for me.
It was those days I ate mangoes, and it really made me to dehydrate to the level that I hate mangoes. But I come to discover that the problem is not the mangoes, but is how I've overtaken the mangoes.
It's mularop. I don't like it. It's the worst sauce I hate. I eat once I'm hungry and I have no option.
The worst thing I've ever eaten, actually it's today morning, I took bad smelling milk in a restaurant. I had gone to take tea, so that's the worst thing I've ever taken.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The World Bank expects the poverty rate in sub-Saharan Africa to fall by 35% by the end of this year. But the bank warns unless there is structural development, such as improved sanitation and better access to education, lifting millions of people in fragile countries out of poverty will not be enough. Ian Buell reports from Washington.
World Bank economist Bryce Quillen says the projected decrease is significant. It has fallen from a poverty rate of 56% in 1990. The goal is to bring global poverty rates to 3% within 15 years. Quillen says efforts to reduce poverty in sub-Saharan Africa are paying off, with strong growth in countries where poverty is particularly high.
That is the first time in history that the record number of impoverished people in Africa has fallen between two points in time. Looking backwards, it has always risen when we did records of the number of poor in Africa.
The report uses the new poverty line of living on $1.90 a day instead of the old $1.25 a day to determine poverty rates. The World Bank is expected to officially announce the new index later this week in their global monitoring report. Quillen explains why the adjustment was necessary.
It's because the goods, costs of goods and services that the poor buy
changes over time. So over time, of course, goods tend to increase in price. So periodically, surveys are conducted to get a sense of what the new prices are, and then these need to translate into a new standard of global poverty, because obviously as prices rise, the way we understand how much income a household needs to have to meet basic needs will change as well.
The increase in goods and services is in part responsible for the decrease in poverty rates in sub-Saharan countries. Quillen says a number of economies there are heavily dependent on the export of primary commodities such as coffee or cocoa. In South Sudan, the main export is, of course, oil. Quillen says the increase in commodities prices not only affects trade, but economic growth as well.
A lot of these high prices have been driven by a lot of demand from emerging markets, particularly China. So in terms of Africa, we have seen a trickle-down effect from the high commodities prices to high levels of aggregate growth down to the incomes of the poorest members of society.
But Quillen says tackling poverty does not simply mean helping people find jobs. He says a country's ability to provide basic necessities to its citizens is a major indicator of its ability to pull itself out of poverty. The World Bank report identifies Warup State in South Sudan as the most underdeveloped region in the world when it comes to sanitation and electricity.
Poverty is not just about having a sufficient income to meet basic needs, but it's also about having access to basic education, basic sanitation, basic personal security. So the general point that we would make is even if a household is living above the $1.90 poverty line, but if they don't have access to some of these basic services, what we call other dimensions of poverty or non-income dimensions of poverty, is it really fair to say that they're not impoverished?
Quillen says sub-Saharan Africa will continue to be a big challenge in terms of meeting the new sustainable development goals. He says despite some gains, progress has been uneven and a lot of work lies ahead. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Bahar al-Ghazal University is helping dozens of their support staff learn how to read and write. The university's workers' trade union has begun offering adult literacy classes to employees who have never attended school before or dropped out when they were young. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this story for VOA from WOW.
Number one is what?
Play.
Adults at Bahar al-Ghazal University sit in an adult literacy class, learning how to pronounce and spell words. The instructor, Philip Kwol, reads words written on the blackboard, and the students, who are university employees, repeat the words after him. 48 of the university support staff are enrolled in adult literacy classes, just like this one. 70-year-old Angelo Makwe says he hopes to continue studying at the university as long as his sight allows him to read and write.
English, how much my quiz?
Makwe says he understands English better in class, but he still finds mathematics difficult. He says he is currently working on book 4 and needs his instructors to support him until he can reach the university level of study. Only 27% of South Sudanese are able to read and write, according to the World Bank. The adult literacy class here is made up of levels 1 and 2. Employees referred to as support staff, including cleaners, security guards, cooks, and drivers, have either never attended school before or dropped out of lower classes. The adult literacy class was established in 2010, but had trouble getting started due to a shortage of classrooms teachers. Malal Majok is chairperson of the Bahar al-Ghazal University Workers' Trade Union. He says the classes were introduced partly to ensure that all university employees learn to communicate in English so that during staff meetings, time is not wasted in translating information.
Most of the workers, especially cleaners, messengers, and some of drivers, they do ask more interpretation in their dialogues. We discover most of the people were illiterate. So our office sat down and come up with a program of establish opening adult literacy classes.
Majok says he believes that once this group of employees are able to read and write, their school-age children will benefit because the parents will be able to monitor their performance and help them with homework.
If you are illiterate, you are asked to sign against the figure you are not aware of. But if you complete this program, you would be able to know exactly the figure of your salary which you are signing against it. The learner will be able to read a simple sentence. They will be able to learn a simple arithmetic. They will not be cheated by the businessman.
The university allows the employees 2 paid working hours per day to attend the adult literacy classes. Though the university employs more than 200 support staff, but they are not all able to attend the adult literacy classes. 53-year-old Michael Kong has worked at the university as a mason for more than 10 years. He says he learned masonry because he had no opportunity to go to school as a child. After joining the adult literacy class 2 years ago, he is now able to read and write.
Anasira, begit, anasafi level 4. Intahit, level 2, level 1.
Kwong says he is now in level 4. He says when he finished level 2 at the university, there were no classes for levels 3 and 4, so the university gave him money to continue outside the university. University English language teacher Philip Kwol says adult learners are responding well, but most of them have difficulties in understanding subjects like science and social studies.
Somebody who cannot write before know how to write and know how to read, this is very important. I see that science is so difficult to them and social study. Those who understand or have a good understanding will know them.
The teachers here are volunteers and receive no pay. Last year, a local NGO, Hope Agency for Relief and Development, or HAD, paid salaries of the instructors, but have since stopped making the payments. University authorities say they plan to construct a permanent classroom for the adult literacy classes. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
A group of South Sudanese artists are planning to travel across the country to try to heal the wounds of 20 months of conflict through their music. Under the theme, 64 Tribes of South Sudan, the musicians plan to travel to different ethnic communities across the country to promote peace and reconciliation. As Philip Thornaleo reports for VOA from Juba, the artists also plan to tour neighboring countries hosting South Sudanese refugees.
The founders of 64 Toes are former refugees. Memories of the suffering they witnessed in the displaced person camps are still fresh in their minds. Mary Atosh was a refugee in Kakuma camp in northern Kenya. Atosh, who is not an artist like most of the founding members here, says it is time for communities to coexist peacefully.
Through civil war, every one of us in South Sudan has been affected. We've been robbed from our human rights. We have not been accessing a lot of things, basic needs. So to me, I take it as a personal mission, and I want each and every one of us to take it as a personal mission, because this is our time, this is our current life, and we want to change the problems that our communities are facing.
Atoy says she is lucky to have received an education, unlike many young South Sudanese girls and women. She says she joined 64 Toes to help women affected by the conflict improve their lives.
Because of the war, most of them were affected. They were raped, they were traumatized, and then there are a lot of diseases that are being spread around, and they are not aware of such things. We want to be going around creating groups of people in every state to pass this kind of message awareness to them, and so that they know how to protect themselves. And those who are traumatized, we'll try to counsel them so that they are back to their normal lives.
Mijung Lang is one of the founders of 64 Toes, which was formed last month. Lang, who performed similar work with humanitarian campaigns as a musician in Canada, plans to lead a 64 Toes tour to East African countries that have hosted many South Sudanese displaced by the conflict.
We are trying this by any means if we can bring peace through music at the same time. And so the main thing of 64 tours is to bring all the South Sudanese artists together, and we tour all the East Africa where other people are, where people are now suffering.
Lang says he is kicking off the peace campaign in other African countries because he believes it is still not safe in parts of South Sudan. He hopes that the government and the armed opposition will respect the permanent ceasefire, even in areas where the heaviest fighting has occurred and residents fled into the bush.
Most of the people are in the hiding and the other people are the UNMISS. And even we even tried that we should be going to UNMISS, but the process is taking too long. So what they told us is that if you guys don't mind, convene all your youth that are all in diaspora right now, especially those in East Africa. These are the people that are crazy, especially young people, through social media.
Lang says he believes that if young men and women accept to live together, irrespective of their ethnic backgrounds, long-lasting peace can be achieved in the country. Local artist Gelding says the conflict between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar is being perceived as a tribal war between Dinka and Nuer, a perception he says is wrong.
This war is not affecting only Nuer and Dinka, but it affected everybody, every citizen in this nation. Yeah, we have to understand all of us, and we have to make something called interaction among each other. We don't have to live with the group in this nation. We need to let everybody know that you have to be tired, drop your gun, use other means to unite our people. Fighting is not the solution.
For VOA News, I am Philip Tona Leo in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan Vice President James Wani Iga and opposition leader Riek Machar did not meet with the U.S. National Security Advisor as planned yesterday. That's because the White House canceled the meeting after both sides failed to adhere to the peace deal, particularly the ceasefire. National Security Council spokesman Ned Price says the White House was going to use the meeting to encourage both sides to implement the peace deal. Price also said President Kiir's decree creating 28 states violates the spirit of the agreement. The caretaker governor of Western Equatoria says the state's security is improving. This comes after a spate of deadly attacks on civilians and military bases by unknown gunmen. Governor Patrick Zamoy is asking the public to help identify those responsible for the killings. Zamoy says most of Western Equatoria is calm now, except for three counties, Mundri East, Mundri West, and Yambio. He blames criminal groups for carrying out the attacks. And finally, Bahar Ghazal University is offering support staff adult literacy classes so they can help children with homework and also help improve their function in society. Many employees have never attended school before. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that's the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Chol Kill by Kang JJ. We have been listening to Khan JJ with the song Chun Kel. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.